Welcome to Flame On. We have a special 101 for you today. I'm Pat, the bearskin rung.
And this is Eric, the muscle daddy. And today we'll be talking about Jean Grey.
Ooh. This is the 101 that we've been planning for a while. But we put on the back burner because we thought it would be too gay putting you and me in a room together to to sit and just marvel at Marvel Girl.
Oh, that's terrible.
I think this next hour or so will be full of really bad puns and... Oh.
Yes, it will be. Yes, it will be.
All right, so pretty much a brief intro into what we're doing here is, Eric, when we first met, and you're wearing the shirt right there, signifying
shirt.
One of the best storylines, I think, in...
X-Men history.
Oh,
comic
yeah.
Book history.
Yeah, the whole Phoenix saga from the beginning all the way through till the death on the moon. Don't cry. Don't cry. Powder those tears away.
Okay.
Powder right over them. Come on. So we wanted to take a little bit of time, and especially with the Marvel Now relaunch, reboot, however you want to refer to it.
Marvel's a relaunch. DC did the reboot.
All right. So the relaunch with Marvel Now, and we'll get into that at the end with the all-new X-Men and the return of Jean Grey to the Marvel Universe.
Kind of. But yes.
The
Marvel convoluted mess that we're going to call Jean Grey's return.
Hey, she's back.
I know. I don't care.
She's back, and she's going to be on the pages of our comic book, so I'm happy about that.
Thank God.
So this next hour or so that we sit here and talk about, it's going to be just going over her history, where she's been, where we think she's going, and just some of our little highlights as, you know, young gay men just idolizing that red hair and green eyes and the power to move things with your mind.
Oh, Jean.
All right. So we have a kind of a loose little thing that we're going to go with here, and I'm sure we'll venture off into little subtopics here and there. But
us? Sorry.
So basically, do you want to go into her origins?
The origin? I believe if my origin of Jean Grey is correct, she was born in New York, and when she was a little girl, I think she was like eight or nine when her friend Annie died, and it was the first time her telepathic powers kicked in, and I just Professor Xavier had to shut them down because she had that connection with Annie, and she basically watched Annie die in her mind. And it was a very, like, she went into almost like a catatonic state. Professor Xavier coaxed her out and shut down her telepathic powers. So from there, she was basically the first student of Charles Xavier. And he went to her first until eventually then she went and joined the school. But I love my girl. I love that girl. But, I mean, there's so many different origins. That's one. Then there's the movie one where she was just a little redheaded bitch that raised cars on the street corner. Nobody minded.
Yeah, I
prefer, nobody burnt that house down.
No. I prefer the best friend dying, getting hit by a car origin. It really plays a huge role into what her character has been and her strength, yet I think kind of her vulnerability and her weakness really just comes from the fact that she watched her best friend die at such a young age. And
what was Annie was hit by a car.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then as she was lying there dying, you know, so graphic for that time, you know, the early 60s, for that to be how you're going to depict a character's origin.
But that was probably even later on. I can't even say when they first appeared. That's how, because she just showed up at the school before they ever really went back into all of their origins.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I mean, it's one of those things where they kind of left a lot of mystery about all of those characters until they really needed to kind of put it into a perspective and show you the background of them. But she did have the telepathic powers. They were shut down. So it kind of left her almost a little stunted when it came down to it. And now, if she were still around, who knows what she'd be doing?
Well, it's funny. I don't even remember when her telepathic powers came back into play. You know, I can't remember. I remember her telekinesis, but then I remember the Phoenix Saga, and that's when she had her telepathy again. So it's somewhere in between she had to start gaining it back. But I don't remember. I don't remember that. If there was a story arc or what have you.
Yeah, I think the Phoenix Saga really was where it kind of brought her telepathic abilities back into the forefront, because of the fact that she had all this extra power and it just kind of opened up her entire mind. Because originally the Phoenix was Jean Grey. Right. That was what it was supposed to be, and there was never any clone, and, you know, she was at the bottom of the river. It was, that's Jean Grey, and it was another avenue for her to have more power and for her to do all these amazing things.
So much more power. No, but she had the telepathic powers beforehand, because she took the memories from Dr. Corvo, had a shuttle, the shuttle, had to pilot the shuttle.
True. So, that is very true.
You know, so but I don't know when that started and when that opened up. It's probably before I even started reading the X-Men. You know, because I didn't start until the Dark Phoenix saga. That's where I started.
That was, I think, probably around the same time that I did, or that's one of my first major memories of the X-Men, was going back and getting that trade paperback.
Yeah.
You know, that was, and to this day, that's still probably the most amazing piece of literature I think I've ever read.
Oh my, it was so, for such a, being such a young kid and reading something so deep and heavy and like real, you know, watching a major player die, someone that was so loved and adored. And it was funny, I didn't, like, I collected the X-Men because that was the thing to do. All my friends were reading X-Men, but I didn't understand them. Until one friend sat me down and gave me everything from the Phoenix Saga up. Because all I knew was this girl, Jean Grey, that everybody talks about but is not around. You know, I'm like, I don't understand. Who is this girl? And I fell in love with her. When I read the whole thing, that's when I fell in love with Jean Grey.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I came into it a little bit later, but I went back and I saw those issues and the whole Phoenix Saga, and that was really one of those key things for me. Jean Grey was probably the one that just stuck out of my mind as my focal point. And I'm not sure what it was for me, but it was just very much about, it was that vulnerability, it was that power, but she wasn't the one that was up in everybody's face fighting them. It was more about being intellectual and cerebral about how to attack and how to do these things, and but being lovable at the same time. Like, everybody loved her.
Everybody loved her.
Yeah.
How dark and evil she got. Everybody just loved Jean.
Exactly.
And I think that's why a lot of people hate her. Like, a disliking of her as a comic book character, because no matter what she does bad, like, everybody still loves her.
Yeah. Very true. I just killed an entire solar system and 16 billion aliens. Oh, Jean. Come
that's
on over
now,
here.
Jean. I just love
her. Oh. All right. So that probably is why most people do hate her, is because of the fact that she can do no wrong.
Exactly. You know, I mean, Emma calls her a cow constantly, but also respects her.
Yes.
You know, she hates her, but has to respect her because what she does do for the X-Men.
Exactly. Even in death, and the fact that she's not around with the Jean Grey school now, and I know with the separation of the two sides. But yeah, it's the fact that she's had the most effect on the entire X universe, more than I think even Charles Xavier has. You know, all the way down to now renaming the Xavier Institute the Jean Grey School for Higher Learning.
Well, yeah, and it's funny, for so long, like since she died for the billionth time, I was just like waiting for her to come back. Please, please bring her back. Please bring her back. And then after a while, I realized that her name has more power than she does. That if she was to appear, she picks sides. She, you know, she would fight for her word, but now everybody's speculating. It's like during Schism, whatever the fuck it's called, with Cyclops and Wolverine, you know, if she was there, she would have chosen a side and be like, no, you're wrong. And instead, her name just digs at people sometimes between Emma and Wolverine and Cyclops.
And I think having that whole thing happen with her not being there preserved, no matter which side you were on as a reader, it let you kind of feel that she would choose Cyclops or she would choose Wolverine, and you can kind of in your own head decide, I think that this was the right choice, and you kind of are able to have that where if she was there, she would have to choose
right
a side.
She'd be like, no, you're wrong, no, you're right, and you know, and
you would have to, yeah, you'd be forced to not be able to kind of play that out in your own mind as to what would happen. You know, the only thing I did love, and the end of AVX fell flat for me. I did enjoy it, and I'm sad that I missed out on the actual conversation during the regular podcast right. for it, but I did find it kind of amusing in a way in that realm, because the shadow Jean Grey
mm-hmm.
that appeared to Cyclops, one of the last things that she said to him, and I think it might have actually been the last thing, was tell Wolverine I like the name of the school.
Well, then, no, that was, she did that in, oh, I think it was Uncanny X-Men, when Cyclops is Dark Phoenix and he's flying and he's going to the end of the universe, which is the White Hot Room. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, I'm disgusted with you. Like, she was totally going off on him that he's doing this.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, one more thing. Before you go, tell Wolverine I like the name of the school. I was like, oh, bitch.
She threw a little dig in there.
Yeah,
as well,
but
you know.
In AVX, in number 12, like, her shadow, she's like, Scott, you have to stop. This has to stop. And I just started masturbating when I read that. And feverishly. And it did, he didn't even have to say Jean before there was a mess all over the register. Just that was, I waited so long for something that was enough.
Yeah.
That at least it paid homage to her being the Phoenix and
exactly.
Not totally ignoring it.
Exactly.
Giving me that goddamn hope. Goddamn son of a bitch.
So, what I got out of that entire conversation is when I go to buy my comics at a comic shop over in Winter Park, make sure that the pages aren't stuck together if they have anything to do with Jean Grey.
Oh, everybody knows. So, all new X-Men, they're all afraid to touch those books coming.
Especially, what is it, issue 3 or 5, that's all, like, Jean is the cover of it.
Oh, 3.
3?
3. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for that one.
Oh, yeah. I am actually, Aaron, if you are listening, I'm going to beg you now that I'm asking for the variant, because I have that pure Jean Grey variant of number 1.
Oh.
The Phoenix in the background, and oh, it's so beautiful.
Oh, yeah. We need to get a hold of that.
Aaron, I love you.
Aaron, I love you too. Come on.
My luck is probably like $150 variant.
we'll all pull our money together. We'll frame it. It'll go from house to house.
I got it this week, people.
The Sisterhood of the Traveling Phoenix.
Yeah. Okay. That was good.
Every so often they're good. Every so often they are. All right. So I think that kind of covers a bit of basically the summary of her life. So let's pop into a couple of different things. I think we touched on her role in the original X-Men. When I say original X-Men, I mean
the 5.
Yeah, the first 5 that there will be coming back in all new X-Men. Well, we haven't read it yet, so we'll wait and see.
We'll wait. I was hoping.
Yes. Well, and this should come out right before this. You guys will be hearing this right before All New X-Men comes out. So we'll all get to read it together and either be very happy or very sad all at the same time. There'll be a collective groan as if we all were like, although I do have to say, just in touching on that real quick, in the review, yes, the 1 or 2 pages that they show,
right,
where Beast is going back and he's the one that kind of recruits them in secret.
Yeah,
from
he's like,
their
you have
times
to stop this.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like, huh.
It was actually quite compelling. I'm not throwing it to the wayside just yet. I want to see if it's going to be that compelling writing throughout the whole thing, or if it may start out strong and then kind of taper off. We'll see how they pull that all together.
Well, somebody posted on my wall one of the pages from it, and it shows like Wolverine yelling at a class, not teaching them, yelling at them, and all of a sudden, like, you just focus Jean, they pop in and you just focus on Jean, and you see him like sniff and just like head out the door, and I'm like, oh, he's either gonna become a pedophile at this point,
because he's, you know, like 150 years old. She's 15.
No, come on, 17. At least make her 17. Everybody wants to make it so young.
Well, come on. I mean, they were all really young when they started the school. They were barely teenagers.
Which, you know, sometimes I think about, you know, if we think about a whole timeline, I mean, it's like probably last week was the Dark Phoenix saga in our world, you know? Like 2 weeks ago when she turned to Dark Phoenix. What?
That was 40 years ago. 2 weeks ago, whatever.
Exactly.
Well, it always makes me laugh about the continuity with ages and everything, because if they really aged the way that they should, they'd all be, you know,
dead.
And nothing was more prevalent than, and I had gotten out of comic books for so long, and after meeting you guys and really kind of getting back into it, I've gone back and I've read a lot of stuff, and I was just reading the all new X-Men books, and then I was reading War Song, or End Song, and a couple of the other things, and there's the one where the one, I forget which book it was, the Cuckoos were pissed at Emma. And they walk away from her, and they called her old. And you hear, like, the last bubble on that, you know, that page is, I'm only 27. I'm like, bitch, in what world are you only 27? Like, I am 31.
You were wearing when Dazzler had, like, mirrors on her roller skates.
Exactly. That was my first introduction to Emma Frost was in the Dark Phoenix saga with the Hellfire Club and Dazzler with her giant disco ball chain and her face paint, you know. So it's funny that, you know, yeah, you really don't kind of get a sense for how old they are.
Well, yeah, see, in DC, they do a reboot. I'm noticing every about 15, 20 years, they start over so this character stay young.
Gotcha.
In Marvel, they continue the continuity, but then, you know, they bring up the, like, Franklin Richards, who's going to be this age forever. Yeah. You know, you'll only get a futuristic, you know, so you'll never really get them really aging.
Yeah, truly exactly. Aging. It's kind of like The Simpsons in that respect.
It's kind of like me.
Eric is only 21.
Yay! You can't see me. Don't judge me.
Exactly. So going into the Dark Phoenix saga, Eric, tell us about the intro to the first time the Phoenix was introduced into the X-Universe.
First time, I mean, right off the bat, how it happened is that she sacrificed herself. Like, she put Scott into a coma, threw him in, they put in that, what was that, that shielding?
Yes.
So the cosmic rays wouldn't hit them, and she was, like, willing to give up her life. And that's when the Phoenix calls out to her and says, you know, I could save your friends, I could save this. And I remember reading it when my friend gave it to me and seeing her body, like, totally deteriorating. Like, her hair was half gone. Like, you saw the radiation, like, killing her. And then that's when she was just like, okay, for them. So she didn't take the Phoenix because she wanted to survive. She took the Phoenix because she wanted her friends to survive.
Yeah, from the get-go, it was all about them, because that was the thing. And that's where we were talking about her telepathic powers being there beforehand, because she did learn how to fly the shuttle through telepathy. And then her whole thing was, I have telekinetic powers. I can put a shield up. I have the best chance of getting this to Earth in one piece. Anybody else that tries to do it isn't going to have that. As soon as those cosmic rays hit, you're dead, we're done, and that's right. It. So, yeah, it was definitely that fearlessness, that self-sacrifice to say, you know what, if I die, it's worth it, because I'm saving the people that I love, and that's exactly what the Phoenix reached out for, and that's what bonded it to Jean Grey.
Saw her sacrificing and just said, let me help. Little do we know.
And then we have the iconic scene that is depicted on Eric's shirt.
My shirt, when she just comes out of the water, I am Phoenix.
Exactly.
And then drops like a rock.
Somebody catch me. I am life incarnate. Oh.
And if you ever watch the cartoon, if you look at her lips are quivering. Yes, people, that's how many times I've seen it. Yes, I know, I'm psychotic.
Which, the cartoon, I think, for being a kids' show in the 90s on with Saturday mornings, really did a great job depicting the entire Phoenix saga from the first Phoenix saga when she took the powers on and became the iconic green and gold Phoenix. Yes.
You know, that I could teleport the whole team into the spaceship with Lalandra, but then I have to drop. Then I can't do anything to help you from there on in. I never understood that, but I was like, okay. I could pinpoint Scott with accuracy. Oh, there he is.
She always had bursts of power.
She did.
And then had to take a nap.
We like to call them siestas.
She went Spanish. Who knew? She is La Phoenix. Now I'm imagining this with this picture of Jean Grey with a sombrero on her head. Maybe we can get Jared to depict that as the art for this episode. But then we went through the whole thing with her being the Phoenix, and everything was all fine and dandy.
Until the absolute power.
Until...
It was Mastermind, really.
I was going to say.
Played with her.
It was Mastermind who kind of tripped all of the breakers in her head. Because Charles, knowing that this was going to be, you know, something she needed to gradually
grow into
and become and live, put the psychic breakers into her head. So that way she did not have absolute power from the get-go, because we all know absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yay.
And I may be wrong. I don't have a huge definitive knowledge of everything before the Phoenix Saga. But this was, I think, the first really major depiction of the Hellfire Club.
That was the first appearance of the Hellfire
Club. It was, okay. Yeah, I thought so. I just wasn't positive. And that's where you had Sebastian Shaw, Franklin Pierce.
Donald Pierce,
yes.
Leland.
Yeah, Leland. Who's that? Price?
I know his last name is Leland. I forget his Wayland? Wayland Leland, something like that. Yeah. But he was the one who could manipulate mass.
Yes. He's the one that crushed Wolverine into the sewer.
And then you had the White Queen, and between her and Mastermind.
And what was Mastermind's
Mastermind role? Can create illusions. Emma made them real.
Yes, but what was his? Because they all had chess names.
Jason Weingard.
But that was his persona, his illusion persona. Was he like the Black Rook?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that.
Because he had the White Queen, he had the Black King with Sebastian Shaw.
Right. See, I don't know Pierce. I didn't know if he had a title or
they all did, but they weren't really referred to. Emma was the only one who has never really had
anything else except the White Queen.
It's her name or the White Queen. Queen, and that was it. She never really had another supervillain name. Where everybody else, Sebastian Shaw, they all went by their names really more than anything else. But yeah, Mastermind popped himself in as Jason Weingard and took her back into medieval times and revolutionary times and basically manipulated Phoenix into being the Black Queen of the Hellfire Club.
And a little bra and panties.
A corset. And her hair up in that crazy bun.
That big, huge bun.
I don't even think you can call that a bun. That's her sombrero right there. She wrapped it around the sombrero. I think there was a chin strap. I don't know.
Oh my god.
When we said this might be the gayest podcast ever.
It is
ever.
The gayest podcast.
It really is.
But yeah, she became the Black Queen and she was just downright evil. But then the Jean Grey part that was still kind of there was the one that fought.
Do you remember how she broke free of Mastermind's hold?
It was
They captured the X-Men.
They captured the X-Men, and she battled. He was battling Cyclops, but she went and killed. See, I get mixed up. Is it the cartoon I'm thinking of, or the actual comic book?
I think it was. I think they were actually both pretty close.
Pretty close, right?
Yeah, they captured all of them because the X-Men broke into the Hellfire Club and they fought. That was the whole thing with Leland knocking Wolverine into the sewer, and then they had them all chained up. But because Jean and Cyclops still had their psychic link, he popped into her head in their revolutionary times, and they had the duel. Wingard and Cyclops had the duel when Wingard won and stabbed and ran him through with a sword and killed, quote-unquote, killed him.
Right.
That was what triggered Jean's breakthrough as opposed to the Black Queen taking over and being a part of the Hellfire Club, and that's when she finally turned around and said, I'm not the Black Queen, and then made Wingard.
All right, I'm
going to
play something. This is how crazy I am. Ready?
I've already been freed. Set free from the constraints of sympathy and morality that bind ordinary human beings. The Phoenix Force inside me aches for sensation.
Now, when I get mad, that's what I listen to.
I love that cartoon so much. Whenever I think of them speaking, it's always in those voices all the time.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how I hear it. And I have that. I have a few clips that I just, when I have my moments, I just listen over and over.
I've got the DVDs out in the garage. I had to pack up a bunch of stuff. I made sure that stayed out. I'm like, if I ever just have one of those days, pop in X-Men volume whatever, I think it's 3, Dark Phoenix Saga, and hit play and just watch them through. But yeah, so she broke free of Wingard and made him one with the stars.
Oh, turned him into a fucking vegetable. I was just, do you want to see me how I truly am? I was like, whoa.
And he's gone.
And that was, I think, the first time that we saw that Mastermind was like this really ugly old man.
Yeah, that was the illusion. Just away the illusion of Jason Wingard, and he was at just almost he reminded me of a little bit of Toad.
Yeah,
kind of Toadish,
very
looking.
Old, yes. And very like ugly. Ooh, yeah, so ugly. She was probably like, oh God.
She's like, now that's why I'm gonna show you how I truly am. So that was really kind of the spark that ignited the Dark Phoenix, and then she went crazy. They tried to stop her, and it took a turn for the moon.
It did, but for a while, I mean, it was a battle, and we saw the battle of Jean Grey and Phoenix, you know, and then Jean Grey assists Professor Xavier to tame the Phoenix, to block it off, until that fucking bitch Lilandra shows up. The Phoenix and Jean Grey must die. I hate Lilandra.
Oh.
When she died in the comic books, I was praising the Lord. But no, I didn't, you know, and for a moment you think that maybe it can be contained, but then when Lilandra brings all the points of the Phoenix and ignites it again on the moon when they go into that battle. Yeah.
Well, I think it was even shown beforehand that even Jean, as the Phoenix, knew that it couldn't really be contained within her, because that battle right before it gets taken to the moon is at her parents' house.
Yeah.
They set that trap for her, and Storm does the fog, and Colossus is trying to beat her down with a tree. Wolverine's, you know, jumping her, and, you know, all this, and she's taking him out one by one, and then Jean takes over for a second when Wolverine's got her pinned down, and she's like, kill me. And that's the point where I think, no matter how much you didn't want it to be that way, you kind of knew that's where it had to go. But it still was so like,
ugh. No.
Like, Jean, I don't care if you killed 60 million aliens. I still love you. Along with everybody else. And then, yeah, they took it to the moon, and it became a showdown. They challenged the Imperial Guard to that one last battle. And the X-Men won, Jean lived, and the Phoenix lived. And if they didn't, then they could kill Phoenix.
Do you know what I read? I was going through my collection not too long, and I came across, shockingly, Jean Grey comics. But there was, I forgot all about this, but the Jabari, which the planet that she destroyed, there were some survivors, you know, that were on space shuttles and doing these trips, and they came back and the system was gone, so they were hunting for her. And they come and they find her. And so she was such a, at this point, I believe she had no telekinesis, just telepathic powers. And she was so powerful that she made them play out the scenario in their head to think that they destroyed the Phoenix, that she looked like the Phoenix, and they did this whole battle. And then you're thinking that she became the Phoenix again. I'm like, oh my God, I don't remember this. And then at the end, they leave and she drops the facade. And the X-Men are like, what did you do? Well, they wanted to believe that they killed me. So I let them believe that they killed me. I'm like, oh my God, woman. Wow. I was like, that was unbelievable.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Just to see the Jabari, some of the survivors come back for her. For her head.
The broccoli people.
Yes, the broccoli people.
The broccoli people got their revenge.
That's terrible.
Oh, man. But, yeah, so, and then we find out, and then this was the big difference between the comics and the cartoon version of that, was the fact that in the cartoon version, because it was a Saturday morning cartoon in the 90s for kids, she didn't die.
Nope.
She was allowed to have a piece of her taken, or she was sacrificed. Everybody had to sacrifice a piece of themselves.
Right, a little piece of their soul to heal her.
To heal her, and she became Jean Grey again and was fine and dandy, where we know in the comics that wasn't the case.
She had that battle, and she's like, I can't control this.
She donned the Marvel Girl outfit, her little short skirt.
Started. And at the end, blood red and gold, baby.
But she pulled the trigger on herself. They outran the Imperial Guard as much as they could, and then they turn around and there she goes. Here's a laser. Whoop, I'm out.
Yep, she takes herself out. She exerted enough energy that she knew she can kill the shell, I guess.
Yeah,
that exactly. Her body was holding the Phoenix for, so she destroyed it.
Exactly.
It was so sad.
And then because of all of the outrage and the popular demand for wanting Jean Grey back, they retconned the entire Dark Phoenix saga.
I think it was 8 years that she was gone.
Something about that. I think it was
like between 5 and 8 years that she was gone. And then I think it was in Fantastic Four. Yes. John Byrne, who was one of the people who was the artist at the time, killed her. Was the player that wrote and brought her back and explained that the Phoenix Force actually duplicated Jean Grey.
Yes.
And Jean Grey was in a healing cocoon at the bottom of Jamaica Bay.
Yes, because the Fantastic Four called up the X-Men and they're like, hey, we found something. We think it's yours. It had a, if found, please return to Xavier Institute sticker on it.
And when she came out of that, she just remembered, I think it was like they were about to deal with... what was the guy's name who did with the Trask and the Sentinels? And right before that's when the Phoenix and they went to space and stuff. So that's all she remembered. And so she came right out of that thinking that this was all Sentinel based.
And this was actually where, and it's taken a bit of a turn, but this is where one of my favorite teams, aside from, you know, my core X-Men, was developed. Because when Jean Grey came back, Cyclops had left and married...
Madeline Pryor. We won't get into that clone.
Shh. I am not Madeline Pryor, I swear.
Yes, he is.
But yeah, Cyclops had left, and the whole point was really to write Cyclops out of the X-Men at that point, move on with Madeline, and her resemblance to Jean originally was just supposed to be coincidental. And he was supposed to be gone, and that was it. And when they retconned and decided to say that it wasn't Jean, that it was, you know, her body was put away and allowed to heal, and the Phoenix created a new body in her exact replica to do all this stuff, that's when the whole thing with making Madeline Pryor a clone came about, and the whole...
It all started with Sinister and...
Exactly. The Sinister tie to the Summers line and the fact that Jean Grey and Cyclops would produce these offspring that would be amazing.
Well, look at them.
Oh, yeah. Well, the funny part is that none of the kids were actually Cyclops and Jean's from the 616 timeline.
Except Cable.
No. Cable's Madeline's.
Well, that's a clone. See, Jean doesn't want the stretch marks. So she's just like,
her
yeah,
surrogate
yeah, yeah.
clone.
I have to stay at this 110 pounds to fit in this fucking costume. I got 6 kids and not a stretch mark to prove it.
Exactly. So that's when X-Factor was founded.
Yes.
And X-Factor began from that because after all of that happened, the original 5 X-Men kind of moved away from the X-Men titles, and then it was focused on the new team.
Well, at the time, I believe the X-Men were considered dead. They went through the siege.
Yeah.
Perilous, and they were living in Australia, I think, the Outback.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, they took over the Reavers hideout and stuff like that. So that's where they were hiding.
That's right. So they were dead. So they were out of the focus. Cyclops was gone. He started his own life, and then they found Jean. And it's like, hey, look what we found. Let's form a new team.
Dumps his wife, his kid, and runs to Jean.
all against Jean Grey's wishes.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time that he went back, Maddie was up and out.
Oh,
she took Nathan and was like, we're out. See you later. So that was the form of X-Factor. And they were the government mutant team.
Right.
They were supposed to be the government mutant team. And we all know that eventually went downhill very quickly.
Always.
But what did come out of that was probably my second favorite storyline out of all of them.
Inferno.
The Inferno storyline.
Oh, I'm just rereading it now. I have the big, huge omnibus.
Oh, I may need to borrow that at some point because I remember hunting those issues down and reading. I don't think I read across every title that it affected, but I think I covered the majority of
This has everything in it. I mean, even crap I don't want to read. X-Terminators, I don't care. I'm like glazing over that crap.
give me X-Men. Give me X-Factor. New Mutants, I think, were also involved in it.
Yep, everybody got involved in it. Excalibur was involved.
Oh, I was going to say Excalibur. I'm like, I'm not sure if they were around at that point.
That's where Jean's daughter, Rachel, was the Phoenix.
Yes.
You know, and she was just hanging out in Britain, and she was just like, oh, God, what's happening?
with her crazy lesbian look. Her mullet with a rat tail.
And spikes for these.
Her skin tight red outfit with spikes all over it. She was a lesbian dominatrix. That's really what she was.
She took after her mother's black queen look.
So So, yeah. So then you had the whole showdown with Madeline Pryor became the Goblin Queen and absorbed remnants of the Phoenix Force. So then you had your showdown between Jean Grey and Madeline Pryor.
Oh, that was so good.
And the epic battle that it was.
It was epic. I mean, the fact that we found out that Maddie was created by Sinister and he couldn't bring it to life. And then when Jean Grey pushed away the Phoenix Force after she died in the moon, the Phoenix was going to her body again to possess it. And Jean pushes it away. It goes into Maddie. And it brings Madeline Pryor to life. So then it was purely the Phoenix versus Jean. And, oh, what a battle.
And we know who won that one.
Me.
I was in my head, I always, no matter whenever I talk about it, I always, in my head is always that iconic picture, the cover of the two of them.
Locked hands.
Locked hands, one up, one down. The Goblin Queen crazy. I don't even
shreds.
Think. Yeah, it was shreds of clothes. It wasn't even an outfit. It was like some crazy things covering her boobs and like a tattered skirt. I don't, and her crazy, you know, like goblin like appearance. But that's when that battle ended. Jean absorbed the memories and
Madeline
that
Pryor.
That all of Madeline Pryor's memories, all of the Phoenix's memories of her time as Jean Grey during the Phoenix and Dark Phoenix saga, and she had to deal with the fact that. Holy shit. I killed 16 million broccoli people. and how am I ever going to deal with this?
But it wasn't me. I swear it wasn't me.
So then I think that was really kind of the quote-unquote death of the Phoenix for a long time.
For year, oh my God. Yeah, we had little hints and little play on it. For years, I mean, Rachel was the Phoenix, her daughter, so we just had that going on.
But she was hanging out in England. Nobody really
cared. Yeah, she was really in England. Nobody cared. They met, I mean, you know, they met here and there, so it was, like, kind of cute.
And a big thing with that was that she pushed Rachel away at first because of the fact that...
She saw the Phoenix Force.
Exactly.
But we know, like, in the future, in Rachel's future, her and... Franklin Richards get married.
Mm-hmm.
So they tie in that family. And I remember I forget the name of the story arc, but they did a story arc where of the Franklin and Rachel being together and everybody coming together. And so that was a lot of fun to watch because then they have a child who would like try to kill everybody again. I think his name was like Hyperion or something. But I remember reading
out of this.
I remember reading it and looking at him. He had like this headdress on and look like a little Phoenix logo. I'm like, what the hell? And then at the end, he explains who he is. I was like, oh, he's Power Phoenix and Franklin? Oh, God.
Golly knows what he will do in that. But yeah, and that's one of those things where and I was just kind of reading about Rachel, some of Rachel's stuff, and the fact that she is the only one of her kind. There is no other Rachel out there.
No.
It's her timeline, Rachel, and that's it.
And there is no more of her timeline. She
exactly.
fixed it.
Yeah, so that's gone. The Days of Future Past is past.
Yeah, now she's just here.
Which I'm curious to see if, with this new movie, if there's any indication of Rachel in the new X-Men movie, since it's going to be Days of Future Past.
Well, supposedly, I know Patrick Stewart signed on. I know Jean Grey signed on for Wolverine.
Yes. I saw that. Something more than likely just a flashback, but...
Yeah, it's a flashback that they've met and all this stuff. Yeah. So I would love to see, you know, something like that. And I'm curious about who they're going to use as the portal.
Exactly.
You know, who's in the future that's going to possess the one in the past.
Do we have more of Kitty Pryde? Do we bring her, you know, and Kate Pryde in the future? Do we have Rachel? Do we have... or do we do something along the lines with Bishop?
I think something's telling me it's going to be Dazzler. That they're going to meet Dazzler in our time. What would be the 70s at that point? So it would be kind of perfect timing for Dazzler, and why not a futuristic Dazzler gets thrown, or they put her there. You know, she goes through it in Alison Blair.
Hmm. I know the Comic Book Queers Facebook group that I'm a part of on Facebook, there's a huge Dazzler following in there, so I'm pretty sure that they would all let out a collective squee if Dazzler was involved.
Well, I remember reading somewhere that there's hints that Dazzler's going to be a part of it. I'm like, that would be a pretty cool portal.
Yeah.
For them, you know, a new character developing and then showing, you know. So yeah. I would like that.
It'd be nice to see some of those characters from, especially that were really brought forth because of such great storylines like the Phoenix Saga, because that was Dazzler's first appearance at the nightclub. And, you know, it would be nice to see those things brought into it and fleshed out. And I would like to see them kind of go back to some of the more comic book related origins. and not twist them as much for the movie adaptation of it, because you've got people that either have stopped reading. Like, for me, I had stopped reading for so long before the X-Men movies came out that there were certain mutations that I didn't realize had happened. You know, like Psylocke melting into shadows. Like, I'm like, what is this one chick doing in the movie? And then I read, I'm like, that's Psylocke? Mm-hmm. What? You know, it's just kind of bizarre. So it'd be nice to kind of keep... If the mutations are part of what they do in the comics, great, fine, dandy. But don't mess with where they came from.
Right.
You know, or at least try to keep them somewhat similar if you're not going to be able to tie it in exactly. You know, with, like you said, with the Jean Grey origin in the movie versus the comic book origin. Rogue's origin in the movie. And I'm a huge Rogue fan on top of everything
else.
I
love Rogue.
I hated Rogue's...
She never did anything.
Exactly.
That was the thing that, you know, she wasn't... And I hated the fact that they then matched her in the comic book. They took away her Miss Marvel. I love that Miss Marvel Rogue. You know, yeah. The battle of the mind, of her keeping control, or Carol taking over here and there, you know, and but having that little Supergirl thing going on. I love that about Rogue. I mean, they just took that away, and I'm like... Ugh.
They gave her layers upon layers because she had other people in her, you know?
Right.
And it was such a crazy way to give somebody something to do without having to do anything. It's like, well, hey, I just got to fight in my own head right now.
Got to go check it out, people.
but yeah, definitely. So it'll be interesting to see how they tie in all of that. But then after Inferno and we go through all that, we then lead into the 90s, Jean Grey, who I think was kind of around the time that I started really getting into it after Inferno and into when you had the blue and gold teams.
Yes. It was Uncanny X-Men and X-Men.
Yes.
And it was really, I think right after X-Factor is when it was no longer, nobody called her Marvel Girl anymore. It was just Jean. Jean.
Exactly.
Jean. Even in the Jean cartoon, Grey. You had Cyclops, you had Storm, you had Rogue, Jean Grey.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, not even Marvel Girl, you got Jean Grey.
Yeah, she, after, because she went from Marvel Girl to Phoenix, back to Marvel Girl, and then she was Marvel Girl all through X-Factor, and then they... You know, updated everything.
Well, they very rarely called her Marvel Girl in that, and then after Inferno, she was just call me Jean.
Yeah, she's like, just hey. Jean. Eh. And that's when she got her crazy gold unitard with her big headpiece with a little like diamond like shape on the top on her forehead, because that's where all her power came out of, was that diamond.
Well, it
was
always 3 years. Things. 3 years she won like the best costume in Wizard when Wizard magazine used to do those things.
Wizard.
She won for 3 years in a row. It's like, that's my girl, number one.
With that crazy ridiculous outfit, it's just kind of funny. But but yeah, so then that was where she really kind of separated herself from any of the Phoenix stuff, and it was just for the longest time she was just Jean Grey, telepath, telekinetic, and she just kind of came into her own as a character, not tied to any outside force.
Right.
And then the iconic wedding,
then the marriage. But before the building up of the marriage, Cyclops constantly asked throughout all of X-Factor, every chance he got, he's like, would you marry me? She's like, shut the fuck up.
She's like, I saw what you did to your last wife.
And you would see that he would, like, first issue, say, 3, like, he gets down on one knee, Jean, will you marry me? She's like, no. And then issue 4, she's like, making out Wolverine. She was a whore. She made out with so many people.
And this is why you are Jean Grey.
Right. Right. Because yet, I do all this stuff, you still love me.
Oh, Eric. We still love you.
It's like, I remember so many covers would be her and Wolverine. And then the next moment, it's her and Cyclops. I'm like, oh. And then her and Warren on a date. What?
Oh, Angel.
Oh, he even had to get in on the action.
Well, it's funny because it might have been the link that you posted on my Facebook page about through the eyes of Marvel Girl and everything. And they were talking about the fact that, you know, they were all in their teens. Mm-hmm. They were all going through puberty as the five of them. And, I mean, Hank wasn't the big blue thing with hooves that he is now. Because he's got hooves. I don't care what you call it. His feet went from giant feet to giant blue furry feet.
And I love giant, you know, yeah. That beast.
That, and that's fine. And even Big Blue Furry Beast at first he was adorable.
Until he turned to Simba.
Exactly. Now he's got hooves. He looks like a minotaur / giant blue cat. Like, it's crazy.
But they go into that whole thing in that article about the fact that they were going through puberty, and any group of four guys and one girl, you're always going to have that kind of tension, and you know, Jean and Cyclops were always kind of a little thing.
They were playing.
But they're all horny teenagers.
And the only one nobody paid mind to was Bobby.
Oh, poor
He's
Bobby.
Probably the one who had the spy cam in everybody's room.
Until he started fucking around with Havoc's girl.
Oh, that's right, Polaris.
Oh,
that
I love
mess.
Her.
Oh, she's a mess.
She's a hot mess, but I
love
her.
Well, I mean, for years I wanted to like, but for the years I was reading, she was Malice. She was possessed and she was evil.
Okay.
And then she came out of it and she became Polaris again, but until they finally admitted the fact that she was Magneto's daughter.
Which I missed. That's part of that all happened when I wasn't reading, and then I picked up and I wanted to read House of M because I'd heard so much about it. Before I started getting back into the books, I went and I read a lot of stuff online. So I'm reading all this stuff about like the House of M and, you know, the fact that they went from millions upon billions of mutants to 200.
Yeah. Well, thank God they were X-Men. Thank God the 200 were mostly X-Men. But, you know, I know Brian, do not hate me, but it was Grant Morrison that did that. Grant Morrison that made the second mutations of everybody, that made a Beast into a cat, you know? And that kind of bothered me.
Well, the funny part about it is there's only, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there's only two that I know that have secondary mutations. Beast and Emma.
And Jean, because her second mutation was becoming the Phoenix again. And that's what he brought back out in her.
Okay. I guess I could
see. Cyclops? No. Yeah, I think that's it.
That's it. But the thing is that Cassandra Nova takes credit for Emma's, the diamond skin, in New X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
It's third book?
Book three?
Torn, I think, is the third book.
Yeah.
When they did them in the book.
The stuff. Volumes.
Yeah, the volumes. Because Cassandra Nova, that's when they first introduced the Hellfire Club back in, and Cassandra Nova takes credit for, she says to Emma straight out, who do you think was responsible for your diamond skin? You know, so right. It's kind of like, so if you take out, and I still kind of, I'm iffy on the Phoenix being secondary mutation, because that's always just kind of been there with her.
Right.
So I could, you know, you could argue the fact that from the beginning, she's always kind of retained a piece of it, and it just needed time to kind of grow again. And then if Cassandra Nova takes credit for Emma's, then you just have Beast. The poor big blue cat with hooves. He's the only
one who got screwed.
He got screwed. And on top of that, apparently in, I think, All New X-Men, number one, he talks about mutating more.
Well, in the pictures I've seen of him, he looks back to what he used to look like more. You know, like back in the 90s Beast,
mm-hmm.
You know, not that weird hairdo he had. It's
not
more,
the not the long snout
right, yeah.
Cat-like
so,
thing.
I mean, it looks a little bit back to being what it was.
Okay,
which
I hope
very
so.
Happy.
Yeah.
Because I can't, you know, some people now draw him that way and some people draw him the cat way.
Yeah.
Depending who likes it.
And that's always kind of the weird thing when you're reading, especially with a crossover like AVX, and you've got the AVX issues where they're drawn by one person. Then you go to Uncanny X-Men. And then Beast makes an appearance in there, and it's a whole other set of people writing and drawing for it. And now he looks like a cat in this one. He doesn't look like a cat in this one.
Right.
He's flat-footed in this one. He's got hooves in this one. You know? I saw a woman walking down to Firestone the other night, and her shoes had no heel. And I swear to God, she looked like Beast. Like, her feet looked like Beast. Because it was just the part, the balls of her foot. And her toes were on the ground, and the way the shoe curved up, I looked at her, and in my head, all I thought was, that's exactly what Beast's feet look like.
Right.
So we're now getting extremely off track.
Right, yeah, yeah. Sorry,
let's go back to
back
horny
to
teenagers.
We're talking about the marriage.
Yes.
That's what we're
talking
about. Wow, we made a left.
We made the hard left and went into Beast's hooves. I don't know.
But yeah, they finally
we might edit
got
that one down a little.
Yeah, we'll
bit.
Edit that one down a little bit. The marriage.
Yes.
I mean, they finally got married after all these years. I liked that Rachel was there.
Yes.
And they had a mother-daughter moment, which was very nice. And, you know, it was a very nice wedding. And then, what was it, like the day or as they were leaving for the honeymoon, they got thrown into the future?
They're like, bam, here's your honeymoon, bitches. Which was actually an awesome
The Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix.
Yes, that I thoroughly enjoyed that because it gave you so much more insight into what happened. Because we all love little Nathan Christopher. And during the whole Inferno saga, they were like, please don't sacrifice him to these goblin demons.
This little baby. And then Apocalypse injects him with the techno virus. Yeah. So he gets thrown to the future. And in that future, that's where Jean and Cyclops get transported to raise him by Rachel.
Yes, the
mother Ascani at the time. And yeah, so she's like, you have to raise him and take care of him. And that's when Jean actually started becoming the mother.
Yes.
You know, and she actually was his mother
yep.
at that point. And still not a stretch mark, but yes, she was his mother.
Good for her.
Yeah,
good. No cocoa butter needed.
Yeah, you want to hear something disgusting? Okay. It still has to do with Jean, but it has to do with Madeline Pryor. Okay, there was Nate Gray, which was created in Age of Apocalypse.
Yes.
It was the clone. It was the DNA of Cyclops and Phoenix.
Yes.
Okay? So he created this Nate Gray. He comes to our time. In our time, he meets Madeline Pryor, and the two of them have this love affair. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Madeline Pryor is the clone of Jean Grey, which is the DNA that created Nate Grey. A little incest, people.
Well, and then even if you just turn around and say that he's technically like an alternate version of Cable, which he was, and then that's Cable's mother.
Yeah.
So no matter what, no matter how you slice it, it really is just an Oedipus Rex type of...
It's disgusting. I read it, and then I think even Jean showed up there, and Jean was like, what the hell is going on here? I think she was even disgusted.
She walked in and was like, ew. Oh, poor Madeline.
Yeah, I mean, she never gets a break. But yeah, in the future, like, they have to protect him from Apocalypse and did all this training and bringing him up with the technovirus and how to control it.
As slim and red.
Yes.
Redded. R-E-D-D. S-L-Y-M.
It was great. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
That was a horrible honeymoon, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, didn't they get transported right back to, like, the day
it was
that
like
they
the
left?
Next day, you know? Because Rachel was able to do that. Yeah. God.
And then Rachel was like, oh.
And what is that? I think they were there for, like...
12 years?
Something like, yeah.
Like, it was 12 years,
puberty,
yeah.
They brought him up to.
Yeah, they pretty much... They raised him through his entire... childhood into, you know,
puberty, and then he goes with the clan Ascani.
Yes.
And they train him from then on in.
Exactly. And then he becomes the warrior Cable and comes back and fucks everybody up.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Him and his clone brother Strife.
Let's not even get to the the X-Men and their clones and the time stream. Anything to give me a headache.
And they always converge back in 616. Like, somehow they always manage to end up back here. 47 different timelines. And they always end up back in this one. Yeah, Cable, you got Strife, you got Nate Gray, you've got Rachel Summers. I was sitting there going, I read somebody post something about, like, the Summers kids or, like, what would be a great Fantastic Four, like, a different Fantastic Four type of thing. And it was like, you know, all the Gray Summers kids. I'm like, God damn, there really are a lot of them, aren't there? For two people that have never had a child together.
Exactly. They have a lot of kids.
They have a lot of kids.
A lot of kids. It is. It's a bit much. But I always joked about whenever I read comics, I'm like, you know, Marvel and their time stream is like DC with their Earths. DC has an Earth for all occasions. Marvel, we're just going to stick our hand in this time stream and we're going to rip this person out. And that's where you came from. Yeah.
Exactly.
What Earth are you from? Oh, Earth 312. I don't know.
I lost count somewhere back there. I hopped on a couple different Earths before I got here, so I'm not sure where I'm at anymore. But yeah, that was definitely a big piece of the puzzle that was missing, because Cable had been around for a little while. Then he'd taken the New Mutants over, made them into X-Force, and to get to see where he came from and really kind of get some closure from Inferno for the people that had been around for that long for it, and then to really kind of give Jean and Cyclops, and especially considering they've never had a child together in the 616, you know, our reality, it was nice for them to have that time to be parents together.
Right.
You know, it might have been in a crazy, you know, apocalyptic age. But hey, they got to raise a child together, so it was good times.
And then in between the after Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix, I remember a battle, I think it was called Sins of the Father. where Cyclops sacrificed himself and merged with Apocalypse. So Jean lost him.
Yes.
For years. Like, she went on the journey, of course, to search for him, to search for Cyclops, and she eventually finds him. And it was, I think, it coincided with the movie, right around the time for the movie, because when she got him back, when she separated Apocalypse from Scott, we got a younger Cyclops. Like, in the movie, he was younger mm-hmm. than her. So they did that, and that's when it went into New X-Men. That fucking bitch. Speaking about Emma.
Yes, because that was a huge, huge thing through pretty much that entire beginning run of it, with six or seven books when they traded them. They put them all together
to three volumes. Yeah, so it was six originally, and then it went to three omnibuses.
Okay, yeah, because I've gone through the six books. That was part of what actually got me back into reading them, was Brian knowing my love of Phoenix and wanting me to kind of get back into reading some of the stuff. So he started me with New X-Men 1 with Grant Morrison's run.
Right? Yes, it was Grant Morrison. Yes. Frank Quietly?
Through most of it, yes. Yeah. Quietly did the majority of it, which is where I learned I'm not a huge fan of his Beast.
And then the man I'm in love with, Phil Jimenez, did the ending.
Oh, yes.
So hot.
Yes. With his crazy Wolverine's ass being the cover of that volume. Well,
no, that was Mark Silvestri. He did the very last issue.
Ah,
he did
okay.
the Tomorrow, Man of Tomorrow, something like that it was called.
Yeah.
X-Men Tomorrow.
Here Comes Tomorrow?
Here Comes Tomorrow, then went into the future.
Yes.
After this was all done.
Because that's where everything got fixed.
Right.
Because then, you know, all right, yeah, so after Jean's death, but anyhow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We'll grumble right
yeah,
now.
Exactly.
So that was where they started to play on the telekinesis coming back into a major play for Jean, because at that point she really was more just a telepath.
Right.
They kind of stripped away her telekinetic powers, and the blossoming of her telekinesis again, and her trying to deal with what's going on in her body as far as her powers go, and being really kind of distant from Cyclops, or in that case really Cyclops being distant from her.
Right, he was the one who was trying to find, since he's in this younger body, he doesn't know what he went through. So he was doing, the person that was there for him was Emma. And I remember there would be times, I think there was a story when Scott and Wolverine and Emma, they were in Japan, and Jean come there, it was nighttime now, Jean pops in, you know, and you see this, like, the telepathic version of her, and she's like, Emma's the first thing on your mind, should I be jealous? I was like, oh. And that was the build. And that was slowly, like, Emma fell in love with Cyclops, yes. She fell in love with him, but they didn't have a physical affair. They had a mental affair.
Yeah, oh, meh, that until I eventually get over it.
I know, we'll never get over it.
Well, yeah, I'll never get over it. But yeah, they did have the mental affair. And it really kind of seemed to start out innocent. Mm-hmm. In a way, at least on Cyclops' end.
It was like he needed somebody to talk to.
Exactly, and she was... He felt like he couldn't connect with Jean. You know, he couldn't deal with... They couldn't connect because of her past as the Phoenix, his connection to Apocalypse.
As well as she was running the school. She was the headmistress of the school. Xavier was, I believe, gone at the time. He yes. left.
Yes. Yeah. And he wasn't one of his times he was dead.
Yeah.
Oh, is he in a chair? Is he walking again? Who knows?
Yeah.
Because then we also introduced Zorn through this whole thing as well. Which, yeah.
Yeah, that's just a mess. Sorry, Brian.
But it does lead into them growing into a psychic affair. And what really got me when I started to absolutely hate it was when Emma started donning the Phoenix costume in those little psychic encounters. And I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then there's that one time
and
where...
And then one time is Jean walks
in. She's like, bam! What?
I love that Jean throws Scott out of his own mind. He's like, I can't even access this.
She's like, would you like to explain this?
And she was just...
And you're gone.
I'll never forget, I was living in the Virgin Islands, and I was getting my comics, you know, via the mail and from New York. And I remember getting these issues and reading it, and it was when she first became the Phoenix, was the school was threatened.
Yes.
And she was by herself, and she had all the kids, and all these army guys came up, and all of a sudden, flame started. And I was like, oh, like I just saw the tips of her hair starting into flame. And I turned that page and she was the phoenix and I masturbated.
Sticky pages again.
Sticky pages. Every time the phoenix shows up, so does my friend.
There's just a little fire in her hair.
That's all it does for me. But then, you know, and then when the battle in the mind, and she was like, oh, you know, Emma, it's just you, me, and the phoenix, and that big double page spread of the big phoenix bird, and Emma crying. I was like, yes.
Oh, the opening day.
Oh, that was good times.
Debacle, yeah.
That was good times. Good times.
Which then led into her accepting the phoenix and really, for the first time, I think, ever, as Jean Grey. And this was no clone. There was no major catastrophe that led to her rebirth as the phoenix.
Right.
This time. Full phoenix, we'll say. Because, you know, what triggers the actual later on is a whole other thing. But this was the first time where she fully was just like, fuck this. You know, I've got power within me. I need to protect the people I care about. And at that point, it was her students because they were coming to storm the school. And she was like, no.
She had to stop it. And she did.
And then with Emma and that whole psychic affair, and she just was at her wit's end and she was done. And that's that, the Firebird. And
she also, I don't remember what happened to Emma, but Emma was shattered. Her diamond was shattered. And
she was shot.
Yeah, and she totally shattered into millions and millions of pieces, and Jean put it together.
Exactly. She was, because she realized
that he loves her.
That she loves Scott. And I think it was less about Scott loving Emma and more about the fact that it wasn't just Emma trying to fuck with Jean and do something to hurt her. It was the fact that Emma actually had fallen in love with Scott. And I think, and Scott was being taken over. He was kidnapped. Something along those lines. Scott was in trouble. I remember that. Scott was in trouble. And Jean used the
put
Phoenix Force.
I remember his saying to her,
Scott needs you.
Yeah, Scott needs you.
And put her back together. And that's when Kazorn shot her. Had one of the students shoot her in her diamond form. And that's what shattered her and the whole nine. So, yeah, so that was, she was starting to accept things in a certain way. But at the same point, was accepting the power and using the power in such a way that wasn't completely dangerous. And then we lead into, after all that, we find out that Zorn is a traitor amongst the troops.
And that whole mess. And, you know, but I liked, they were, what was it? The ship, Wolverine and Jean were on a ship headed toward the sun. And
well, they got lured up into space.
Yeah.
And then Jean all of a sudden goes, or no, that was Phantom X.
Yep.
And Wolverine, because of the Weapon Plus project.
Yes.
So Wolverine had gone with Cyclops and Phantom X out into space to try to stop that whole thing. Wolverine's finding out about himself and his past and all that. So yeah. Jean's got to go save him.
Of course.
Damn Wolverine. I've never been a fan of Wolverine. I think it's just way too overhyped. I mean, he's got some good points, granted, but whatever. And then, yeah, she goes to save him. And then she goes to him, she goes, look at where we are, Asteroid M. And it was such a kickback to old school Magneto with all of that and bringing Asteroid M back, you know. And that led to the final issues of Jean Grey.
The final issues that their ship was headed toward the sun. And she's like, you don't have a choice, Wolverine. You have to do it. And he had to kill her. And he kept stabbing her and stabbing her until finally it released the phoenix.
Yeah.
And the phoenix took over. And I remember when she shows up back at the school and Emma's just like, ugh, look who's showing off again.
Always has to make an entrance. That's right, because she and Beast were, what was it, like in Antarctica or whatever. Yeah.
And there was this like spaceship part phoenix. And she was like, ugh.
Show off.
But it was great. And it was the last moment and she went off on Magneto and Magneto gives her a stroke.
I
guess it was more of the Jean in control that it happened. I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's still to this day. I read that, and I think I might have thrown the book across the room. And I was like, why the hell did you let me read this?
It was, I think, the weakest way that they killed her.
Oh, my God, yeah. Because he touched her. Oh, I sent an electromagnetic pulse through you that would destroy the solar system. Bitch, when did you get that power? You could bend spoons with your mind. Like, I don't get this. How are you taking out like a celestial entity's force in a, you know, in an omega level mutant?
Right. like nothing. He took her out. And blood coming out of her nose. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. It's just, I cried. Of course I cried. I had no hard on for years. But then, of course, you know, then they finished it off with the tomorrow one, the future, Here Comes Tomorrow, that they show that she comes back. And she, as the White Phoenix, when she puts the universe back together.
Did she become the White Phoenix at that point?
In that point, that's at the end of that, there's no universe, so she recreates it.
Yeah, no, oh, okay. Yeah, because it showed all the White Phoenix of the crown.
Yeah, because it shows at first, like, Cyclops mourning and not being able to go on after her death.
And Emma wants to run the school with him. And
right,
he's
like,
her
no,
and
no.
Away.
And then it shows Jean at the end taking pieces of her away from him so he can heal. And have them together.
Yeah, her tears rebuilt the universe in the way it was supposed to be.
And that was the last time we saw Jean for years.
Until
end song.
I love that we did that in unison. That
I mean, we didn't even plan that, people.
Everybody's sitting there going, God damn, they're gay. But end song was brilliantly drawn. Colored like
it was beautiful. I loved it.
Aesthetically,
every moment of it
was just amazing. I had the digital version of it. We had downloaded from one of the apps on our phones, and I'm just sitting there, and I was entranced through its 5-6 issues, something like that. Somewhere
I think it was 5 issues.
Yeah. So and going through it all, and it was amazing to see how they brought it back, and the fact that the Phoenix went and dug up Jean Grey. It's like, I can't do nothing else. Let me go bring her back from the dead again. On the tail of a dragonfly.
Oh, it was so nice.
So poetic. And it was so interesting to see how they started everything from the Phoenix Force kind of bouncing from person to person and going,
why am I here? Why am I here?
Oh, you're not who I'm looking for. And it was really kind of awesome how they gave you little insights into each of the characters as it went from person to person, from the Cuckoos to Quentin Quire to Beast.
To Wolverine, funny little man.
Yeah. He is a funny little man. And then finally getting to Jean Grey's grave and going, oh, that's why I'm here. Hello.
Yeah.
Let's pull you out the ground. And then it realizing that it wasn't ready to come back, but then knowing that it needed the power. Which then sparked the whole Quentin Quire trying to grab the Phoenix for himself.
And there was split. There was the Phoenix, Jean Grey, and Jean Grey. Jean Grey, she buried as the in the green and gold, and she was red and gold, the Phoenix. And she was going around. But one of my favorite parts is, like, she shows up to Wolverine, and Wolverine's like, it's not you, and stuff like that. And she goes, yes, it is. And she has him stab her. Like, for 2 pages, he did nothing but stab the shit out of Jean Grey. And then finally, you turn the 3rd page, he goes, well, now that she's sleeping. I was like, you know what, Wolverine, haven't you learned anything?
Isn't this how this happened the last time, Wolverine?
Because now the Phoenix was in control.
Exactly.
Jean was not dead. Jean was sleeping, healing, and the Phoenix was now in control of everything.
Exactly.
Stupid ass.
And then it decided to try to take over Emma.
It wanted Scott's power.
Yes.
Because Scott had that unlimited power.
Yes.
That could constantly keep her energy up and absorb all of it.
So they put him in that little egg. And Cyclops kept shooting at her. Then they were like, oh shit, that's what it wants. Never mind, get out of there. They're like, God damn, we screwed up again. Haven't we learned our lessons yet?
And then Kitty goes down and pulls Jean Grey out of the frozen, the Antarctic, whatever the hell she was in, but pulls her out. And that's when it was Phoenix versus Jean.
Yeah.
You know, and they just went at it, and she rips the Phoenix Force right out of Emma. Just rips it out of her, grabs Emma, and just throws Emma aside.
She's like, bitch, you don't got this. I do.
And it was that epic moment of, I have to bond with this to make this stop. And just seeing, I think it was Emma, right? She had the Cerebro, and she had everybody connected to saying, we love you, we love you, we love you.
Was it Emma that did that?
I think it was Emma through Cerebro. And
or
the Cuckoos at the point had everybody that was ever connected to Jean say, I love you.
Rachel, Wolverine,
Cable, everybody all over the world. Havoc was there, you know? And they all touched, and then she had mascara running down her face, and she was crying.
I think that was my favorite panel out of the entire thing was the tears running. And it's just like half or three quarters of her face on the panel. Mm-hmm. And it's just the tears running down, and then the word bubbles down the side of it. So amazingly done. Evoked such emotion.
Ugh.
For every Jean Grey fan. And even if you really weren't a huge Jean Grey fan, the way it was written was so amazing that it so pulled at your heartstrings that it's like, is that person that everybody is missing but knows can't be back.
Right.
Like, they know this isn't real. They know this isn't right. But it's just, it's kind of almost, it's almost a closure. It's that healing point for everybody where they're able to kind of finally, one last time, get to say, I love you. And then
she turned, and then I remember Scott going like, who are you? When she was now in the white and gold, she was like, I am Jean Grey, and I am the Phoenix.
I am the white Phoenix of the crown.
It was fabulous.
And she's holding her, she's holding herself in her seductive pose. In her white
look
and gold.
Look at my breasts.
she's like, don't you see me holding my breasts up? I'm the white Phoenix of the crown.
It was beautiful, and she was going to find the rest of it. That was her journey, and that was the last we heard of her.
She was brought back too early. So she's got to go back to the white hot room and
heal,
become whole again, and then we'll see her in another like 10 years.
And it's been about 10 years.
Yeah, she'll pop back up around at some point, which then leads into Jean Grey coming back.
Yay!
in this all new X-Men. But my biggest thing, and this was part of the reason why I felt so flat at the end of AVX. Cyclops was right.
Yes,
and the Phoenix
was
the key to restarting the mutant population. But the way they did it gutted me. Because depending on how you read it, it could really just mean the end of Jean Grey as Phoenix. Again, maybe not a horrible thing.
Right.
But at the same point, where this whole thing started with Wanda uttering the words, no more mutants. And she couldn't get it right, and she didn't annihilate all of them. She just got rid of, you know,
everybody else except the X-Men.
Exactly. And, you know, her and her siblings. But she joined with Hope, the two people that could hurt the Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And she uttered the words, no more Phoenix.
But at the end, you know, they focused on Hope, and she was on the island and stuff. And then Hope took a step, and the flower grew.
Yes.
Which I took it as this Phoenix. Because that's it showed in every time the Phoenix destroyed a world, a flower grew.
Hmm.
So in all the very first, I think, 3 or 4 issues when it was coming to Earth, it would destroy a planet and would show a flower. Hmm. So I think that's, it's not gone.
So maybe Hope absorbed
some of it. Even if there's an essence.
Yes.
It's still there that can build.
Because as in Endsong, where it was just a fragment of the Phoenix Force, is what then started that whole ball rolling. So it restarted the mutant population. Lights are popping up all over Cerebro. And it really did what it was supposed to do. And it did bring rebirth of the mutant population, which was all it wanted to do.
That's it.
You know?
But, I mean, Scott knew better. And I wonder if Hope just accepted it, what would have happened? Would have just started, and then she would have left as the Phoenix, which I really wanted because I hate Hope.
Well, the Phoenix knew. Even if she had said, I'm ready, the Phoenix knew she wasn't ready, and it wasn't willing to just settle for somebody who wasn't going to be able to fully understand and handle it.
Right.
And then the Avengers went and fucked it all up by splitting it into 5 pieces, trying to destroy it.
Great job.
Yeah.
Great job, Iron Man. Great job.
Exactly. You would think maybe they would know better. No, not so much. But it did lead into the restarting of the mutant population, and hopefully, no pun intended, you know, if Hope did absorb some of it, it will keep the Phoenix alive in some way, shape, or form that they maybe will be able to come back to it later on.
Well, because look, Wanda's power never killed off the mutant race. It just severed some kind of a tie.
Yes.
And that's what they explained. Like, your brain couldn't access your power. You had it. You just couldn't get to it.
Yes, because that was...
Because that's how Emma restarted Iceman. Because Iceman had no powers, and Emma was able to restart it for him.
Because she was able to go in and poke around.
Right.
So, and that's that was the whole depowering of mutants on top. Not even just the fact that there were no more. You depowered all of these mutants, and there was really no new ones born outside of Hope. You know, the Second Coming, the Messiah Complex, all of that.
And I'm sorry, if we go to the Hope, she was born in Alaska, where Madeline Pryor was created. Mm-hmm. And she had red hair and green. I was a firm believer that she was a clone that Sinister created. to take the Phoenix, knowing that in the future, and that's what I really thought she was going to wind up being. You know, just it was created because they used the DNA of Jean Grey, which is all it really knows. It knows that's the attraction to the Phoenix. Because
it had bonded with it, with Jean, so long ago, and it has had this bond for 40 years, 40 plus years at this point.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in their time, it's like 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks or a month.
It's known her for about, you know, 4 months.
But what broke my heart in AVX, and I just have to, for Rachel, and Rachel had the Phoenix for so long, and she was the one who was able to tame it, mm-hmm. I guess, or bend it to her will,
yep.
And it didn't even acknowledge her. You know, and I remember her and Cyclops walking and talking, and she's like, does it talk about me? I'm like, really? Really?
Like a bad breakup?
Exactly. Does he still think about me?
Does he ever ask about me? Does he ask how I'm doing?
You know, and that's what she, I was like, wow. And it's like that, it should have been one of her, too. She should have been taking it. Not magic. Fucking bitch. Sorry.
But I think part of that is because Rachel is such a unique character to any timeline. And I had mentioned this earlier, that there is no other Rachel.
Right.
Rachel, as the Hound, as Phoenix, as whatever, when she crossed over from her timeline to ours, there's never been another Rachel. There is no other mention of Rachel. There's no ultimate Rachel. There's no any other timeline Rachel. Rachel Summers that is there is Rachel, and that's it. So maybe in this timeline, or because of that, the Phoenix really didn't
know her.
Respond to her, didn't know her.
Right.
So didn't reach out to her. And she really wasn't even, at that point, she wasn't even a part of what was going on, because that was Cyclops' X-Men.
Right, she was with Wolverine.
And she was
with kinda.
Well, yeah, she ended up being a turncoat, but when it came down to it, she wasn't there. Had she been a part of that side of it, maybe that would have been.
Right.
And she would have gotten a cuter Phoenix outfit than her. Or, you know, what would have been really funny is if they just went back to that red with the spikes on it. Everybody else gets a really cool new outfit.
She goes, what the hell?
She gets her mullet and her rat tail back. She goes, fuck. Somebody get this out of me. Somebody shoot me, please.
Logan.
I need to be stabbed. Come on. But, yeah, that really would have been kind of... It would have been nice to see that and see Rachel. And I like the fact that now, getting back into reading them, seeing Rachel being a little bit more prominent in the titles. I loved her in Excalibur. I loved Excalibur as a whole.
I did. I was a big fan of Excalibur.
I love Captain Britain. He's my favorite. Sorry.
I like that. You know, it's funny. Excalibur made me fall in love with Nightcrawler. That's where... I mean, I liked him in the X-Men,
yes.
But he was such a great character in Excalibur.
Yes.
You know, and I really liked him, and I thought he was great, and then Colossus was there, and Kitty was there, and Megan, God only knows what her thing is.
But, where is she?
And she pops in when you need her. When she showed up when Captain Britain joined Secret Avengers, she was there.
Ah.
You know, with him, not as Megan, you know, doing the power thing, but she was with him, the wife.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now she's just as long as she's still around somewhere.
Yeah, she's still around.
Then she lost her powers?
I don't know.
Nobody really cares about
that. Yeah, no one really cares. You see, yeah, there's Megan.
Are you still barefoot and wearing that green dress, girl? All right. We're good. Just checking in on you. So it's good to see that the Phoenix really did bring rebirth, and it burns away what doesn't work, and it rebuilds and makes better.
So now hopefully we'll get better.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing, now we go into all new X-Men.
Yes.
Which Hank Beast goes back in time and pulls the original five from his timeline, not an alternate timeline, from his timeline, because they have to fix what happened.
He wants them to fix it. A little far.
Which, you know, I'm like, okay, you're confronting them of the future, of things they're going to do.
Which should, in turn, fuck up what's
exactly
going on right here, right now.
Exactly. Like, okay, now, if Jean turns around, she'd be like, oh, I killed how many billions of people? Oh, and so now the Phoenix calls out to her, and she goes, no.
Exactly.
So will the Phoenix ever come to Earth? Or is it destined? Will the Phoenix always bond with Jean Grey? Is that always a destiny?
But
that's the
at
thing.
That point, does she start as the good Phoenix?
Or just goes right to
Dark
Phoenix.
Or goes right to Dark Phoenix.
Fuck
this. She's like, I don't want this. Fuck. All right. Well, where are those broccoli people? I'll go kill them now. She's sitting there. She's got her cell phone out. She's got her little calendar. I kill broccoli people tomorrow. All right. I'll get right on that. Gene, what are you doing tomorrow? Oh, I got to go kill a solar system. I'll see y'all later.
I got to eat a star.
So it'll be interesting to see how that's going to affect
everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Because they're not just, it's not, the one big thing is it's not a one shot. It's not,
it's a new ongoing. It's an ongoing. He plans on doing this, which, you know, Bendis is known, look at how long he was on the Avengers.
Yeah.
I mean, he agreed to do the X-Men if he could do the originals. And this is the only way they could do it. So we'll see. We're going to see what's going to happen, if things are going to change, or this, everything is just destined. No matter what they do, it's not going to change. It's just maybe going to be aware.
It's possible. I almost think that it would have been I like the premise. I think with so much sci-fi in everybody's minds, and even, you know, mainstream sci-fi, you talk like Charmed, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, those shows that were so big where you didn't need to be a sci-fi person or a fan of like witchcraft and vampires, right, and all that, that we all have that in our head of, well, if you go back and you change the past, you completely alter the future.
That butterfly effect.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
You know, that right there.
That movie right there.
You know, that's the big one. And it's...
So had they taken them from an alternate reality in some way and just... And Beast had gone and found... And it was basically to show, like, the pure nature of where they started and pull them from that, so that way he could help change the course of where we're going now. I could see that, because then you're not outright affecting your past. You're taking somebody else's past and you're fucking with it. But whatever.
They're not mine. I don't care.
He's like, we're not in that timeline. Whatever. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. It'll be great to have Jean Grey back on the canvas in any way, shape, or form.
I'm so excited Jean Grey is going to go to the Jean Grey School. I'm like, it's like such a big thrill for me.
She's like, hey, that's me. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how they respond to Xavier being gone and dead this time.
And even what he did to them.
Exactly.
Like, he fucked with all their minds. You know? So now they're going to go... So you never know that in the future. It could be the outcome after the Bendis' run or end of this big story arc. It could be that from a different timeline. Yeah. You know? And that's the Gene that stays. And I don't know. Nobody knows. Right now they're saying that this is out. 616 is passed.
So it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it. I don't think I've been really kind of excited for a storyline. I'm going into it with a little trepidation, because you never know how it's going to turn out. You don't know if it's going to be a complete flop.
Right.
You know, like I said, that one page or two page excerpt that they showed in the preview book, it was compelling.
Right.
The way that it was written, and I think that it has a chance to really make an impact and make a mark, but at the same point, you know, now you've pulled your past self out of the past, so now they can't do those things that they were supposed to be doing to get you to where you're at now, and you're also changing them. So even if you send them back, it's going to alter. So there's so many loose ends,
exactly,
to see how they're going
to
really
run. To see
run.
What the whole outcome, why they're doing this.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sure there's a bigger picture that we just don't know.
So we'll be looking forward to that. That's the 17th? 14th?
17th.
Okay.
Oh, gee.
Which I think we were talking about releasing this right before, the Friday before the release of that. So we'll be waiting to see how that turns out.
And in comics, I'm supposedly be getting two copies, preview copies.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be able to read it hopefully this week.
I'm so excited. Best be calling a brother and be like, what's up?
I'm going to post everything about everything. No, I'm not.
So,
I think it's the first time Aaron's going to like tie me down and not make me do anything.
Eric, you just take this week off, all right?
But geez.
Nobody wants to be spoiled, all right? So it'll be definitely interesting to see how that goes. So I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Yes.
So if you were to take your expansive Jean Grey knowledge and history, what would you say is like the one pivotal or your most standout moment in Jean Grey's storied history?
Okay, this is not really, it was a backup story. And one of the, I think it actually was a fill-in issue. And it was Jean Grey, her telepathy is so strong that she bonded with this puppy. A puppy that was beaten and killed. And she went after, she was already Phoenix-y at this point, and she was going after the kids who did this to her, to this puppy, with a bloodlust. But the way they drew it and the way they talked about it, of the connection and this puppy going, am I a good dog now if I don't do this? Will you stop hitting? And I can't even how much it like just broke my heart that Gene was like feeling that this puppy was trying to do everything to be good so they stop hitting it and beating it and torturing this poor puppy, setting it. It was horrific. And just Jean Grey, like Cyclops, looked at her and she just went dark. Instantly her face went really dark and she's like, I'm gonna kill them. And Cyclops had to talk her down. And that was a moment of Jean that I will never forget, that just, it just really touched me. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff, but that's one thing that always sticks out.
Yeah, that's,
for me.
That's absolutely amazing, because it shows how powerful, how, I don't want to say vindictive, but how determined and how fierce she is to defend
mm-hmm.
the people or the things that can't defend themselves. And that's always been the fiber of her being, has really just been that girl next door, the mother figure, everything that's good.
Right.
That even when she goes bad, it's always, there's always a core of selflessness in it. I mean, aside from the, you know, eating a star and destroying a solar system. It wasn't her fault, though. We still love you, Gene. Oh, Gene. Wah, wah, wah. No, and that really kind of brings it back down. I think in going through reading some of the newer stuff, and I mean, I loved the Dark Phoenix saga, her turning the laser on herself and, you know, saying goodbye to Scott was probably one of the most powerful things I read when I started reading comics. But End Song, that what we talked
that
about
moment,
before,
yeah.
That moment where she finally stops and sees everybody that cares about her, and that's, you know, like Rachel saying, I love you, Mom, and all those, that I think was probably the most emotional Phoenix Jean Grey moment I think I've ever had reading any of them. They've all been so amazingly poignant and so powerfully written, but that one scene, and especially the way that they did it, and it was drawn with the, you know, the shadow telepathic heads of everybody, yep. and just seeing how much she's loved. And it even kind of broke Emma a little bit, and she's like, God damn.
Yeah, Emma was like, damn, are you a loved woman?
You know? She's like, I still hate you.
Cow.
I don't care about your new outfit, whatever. You're copying my white look, stop it. But I think in kind of becoming a reader again, I think that's probably been my most standout moment. And I think I actually even had tears rolling down my cheeks for that. And I don't, you know, I get emotional during some of the stuff, but I don't think I've ever cried during a, you know, reading a book. And that was just so powerfully written and so amazingly drawn that it just, it trumped, I think, everything else that I've ever read. And it just was knowing that, wow, that's kind of the end of the line.
Right.
You never say never. Because, you know, they bring back just about everybody.
Well, I do like that we're getting Jean again, and we're not getting the convoluted Phoenix mess.
Yes.
That's the one. It's exactly. We're wiping the slate without really wiping the slate.
Yes.
Which I like. It's now going to be a different Jean again. Now she's going to grow up, you know, all over again.
But with the knowledge of everything that happened to her.
Well, that's if she stays here. Like Brian was talking about, how possibly, supposing she stays. Supposing they all go back and she stays, and now that's the Jean Grey that's here. What happens?
Exactly. But the cover of issue 3 of All New X-Men, it's got her at the center, but then it's got her fighting with the Living Monolith in one corner. It's got, you know, like the Phoenix in one corner. It's got all these different things, and so I'm assuming
that's the variant one that I want.
Oh, is that
the regular cover is her in the little Miss Marvel, Marvel Girl outfit, and she has all the pictures of the Dark Phoenix saga, the wedding, and she's just looking up.
Oh,
she has
okay.
all these pictures. That's the regular cover.
Ah.
The variant is the one I want with all the jeans. Oh
okay. For some reason, I thought that was actually a couple issues in, because I saw the cover posted. I saw that picture on Facebook, and I was like, and I want this.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, give me.
So it'll be interesting to see how they play all that, because that's right from the start, that's going to be a huge issue. You know, how she's going to cope and how she's going to deal with that. So,
and how long until Wolverine rapes her? I give it a week. I mean, it'll be 10 years in our time. I'll be dead, but I give it a week.
Exactly. So I think that really kind of just covers
our little
we did it.
Jean Grey talk. And we didn't sit here with our on the bed, you know, with our hand, our fists under our chins going, so.
Jean's so pretty.
I wish I had her outfits. So.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see how they take this. It'll be nice to see Jean Grey back into our continuity, however they're going to do this. Could be great.
I'm excited.
It could suck.
I'm very excited. I know. It can go either way.
But it's built up a definite hype and a definite desire to see how this plays out. So I'm sure that the next Flame On recording will...
I'll just get bitch slapped. Just tell Gene, shut the fuck up.
I'm sure that'll be a topic that'll be discussed in depth on that one. So maybe I'll be a part of that conversation.
Bear skin rug.
With the bear skin rug. Back. So we'll see. But until then, we'll catch you on the next episode.
So I'm going to say flame off for now, but I know there's going to be a surprise.
Hey, listeners, it's Oral from, Flame On. Now, I know they have bored you to tears with blah, 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 Jean Grey, blah, 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 Madeline, blah, 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 she's coming back. But nobody wanted her back. She's been dead for years. She should have stayed dead. And even now, out of everything that came out of AVX, what have we learned? Nobody cares about the Phoenix. The Phoenix was just the stepping stone to rekindle the mutant race. Phoenix destroys every planet on its way back to Earth, and nobody talks about that. But you have one bad day, all the mutants disappear, and public enemy number one, bullshit. I call shenanigans. Shenanigans. And to end this, no more Jean, no more Madeline, no more Phoenix.